The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Got a little extra music there this morning. Good morning. You are joining We the People Radio with Aaron.
And Bill.
And
Bob Martin.
There you have it. Just me and the boys today. Elizabeth and her lovely husband are off on an adventure.
Yeah, we got our hands full, Bob.
I guess we're supposed to say they're off on assignment. Their assignment is to not be in town. That's their assignment. Tough assignment.
Top secret assignment.
Top secret. Well, for all you folks out there that haven't joined us before, we're not like every other radio program. Every other radio program interviews people for, 3 seconds and talks over them, and you never learn anything. And this one goes on for a couple hours, very low key. You're going to learn all sorts of good stuff. And this week we have Elizabeth Nickson on, N-I-C-K-S-O-N, different, huh? She wrote a book called Eco-Fascists, and we were supposed to have her on last week, and then we had a little, miscue. I was out of communication on Saturday, and while I was incommunicado, she searched the web and thought that We the People Radio was off the air because there was some other one that died, I guess, someplace.
There are several imposters across the land, several other We the People Radio shows.
And because they were imposters, they couldn't keep their show afloat, and they were gone then.
There's only one like this one.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say.
It's probably best that way. So she thought we were gone, so she slept in. Pure and simple. She was doing what we were wishing we were doing.
That really doesn't sound like a bad idea.
I know. It's a little late now.
My suspicion was correct. She had, in fact, turned her phone off.
Yeah, she did, which explained why it just kept ringing. To no avail. Hey, well, you live on an island outside of British Columbia, and I don't know. It kind of sounds pretty. I did a little Google Earth thing. She lives on Salt Springs Island in British Columbia. But I had a chance to talk to her last week, and I think you guys are going to like her a lot. So we're going to call her in about 5 seconds here. What else are we going to tell you? There's some confusing things going on out there. Oh, yeah, before I do that, I'm sorry. I got to do Elizabeth's job. I don't usually do this part. All right, back to the beginning. You can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. That's our website. And there is a button on there that says Listen Live. When you click that, it'll bring up the chat room, log in, and you can ask questions that way. You can just talk about nothing with the other people in the chat room, which is pretty commonly what the chat room's for. You can call us if you'd like to call in. The number is 530-605-4567. So all that being said, I got all the business end out of here. Are we good?
I think we're hot.
Put your microphone over, knucklehead. Okay, so let's see. Updates. Reading Tea Party tomorrow night. Thanks to all the folks at the Tea Party who are like our biggest bulk of sponsorship for this program. And those guys do a great job. We have a zillion volunteers. And bottom line is, if you're going to a tea party that has less than 100 people there and you're in Reading, you're at the wrong group. You got to go to the what? You got to go to the one with stuff happening where you can plug in and do things. So tomorrow night we are working on the assembly debate, hotly contested assembly race between Brian Daly and Rick Bassetti. Here in Reading, 6 o'clock, Destiny Fellowship Church. It was Bonneview Baptist for 8,000 years. Destiny Fellowship Church is at 2570 South Bonneview. Like I said, begins at 6 o'clock. But I would get there early because I know one of the candidates sent out an announcement to all their folks and said, be there at quarter till. So, newsflash, be there early. The congressional debate drew a group of about 350. So, anyway, if you would like to meet your assembly candidates, I know Dan has a great program worked up. I wasn't in charge of that part, but it will launch on or about 6 p.m., usually 6:05. I don't know what. We have like an infatuation with 6:05. Can you say? Let's see. Bob's like on the phone. He's got all sorts of stuff going on over there. Bill, how about the sheriff's event yesterday? We should do a tiny recap.
Sheriff's event was totally awesome.
That's totally awesome.
We have six, seven sheriffs there.
up in Grants Pass. And so supportruralamerica.com is a site that, you'll see it's connected to the Tea Party website and that kind of thing. And Support Rural America sort of popped up last year with all the different issues that we have affecting our ranchers and farmers and, you know, those of us who just maybe have a septic system or a well or who live out of town or who live in town but know people out of town. We're kind of our own special breed up here, and we're typically across the country highly underrepresented. So we've got all sorts of stuff going on. We've got water issues, and I know Gary Cadd wants me to remind you all, if you live in Reading, to attend the Board of Supervisors at 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning, and he'll tell you why tomorrow night. What else we have going?
There was probably 300 people there yesterday.
Yeah, they had a lot of people.
Yeah, it was pretty full.
You had two sheriffs from Oregon. Oh, the one guy was hilarious. He represents a county with, like, I don't know, 1,500 people in it. And I forget what happened to the sheriff. I was going to say the regular sheriff.
He ran off with the help, remember?
That's right. That's right. He ran away with the head deputy or whatever. And so the sheriff's seat was vacant. So he decided to run as a write-in. But he was running unopposed, so he just kind of won anyway.
Unopposed as a write-in.
Something about the way he told it was just so darn funny.
And do we know what sex the head deputy was?
Not
that it matters.
It was all on the up and up.
Yeah.
Well, something like that.
I think it's down low is what you're talking about. It was pretty funny. You know, you learn a lot at these events. Some little extra things, too.
What was interesting is he was 70 years old.
Yeah, he's the oldest.
Spry.
He's the oldest working sheriff. And the guy next to me leans over and he goes, "Those are the dangerous ones. They just shoot them." And then he started talking, and we were like, "Oh, that might be right." But so it was cool. It was good to spread the sheriff's events up into Oregon, and real low key, nothing fancy. Sheriffs just talked about what's going on in their county, what they could use for help from the citizenry, and the FYIs that they need to know about what's happening.
You know, it was funny. It was the same theme with all of them, is they were all seriously underfunded, and they really needed the help of the community to kind of keep it together.
Yeah, and that's a pretty common theme these days.
Before we get to Elizabeth, who we do have on the line, Elizabeth Nixon.
Yes. Hello, Elizabeth.
Our own Elizabeth hasn't checked in yet, but
she's sleeping. So but, isn't Elizabeth sleeping on a Sunday morning? What's up with that?
We do have Comrade Ann on line one, who needs to get something to us right quick before she has to leave. So, Ann?
Fabulous.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Hey, I don't know if this is going to be along the lines that your guests will be talking about today, but we take the Capitol Press newspaper, and yesterday the headlines in the latest edition is hidden EPA emails alleged, and apparently in Washington State there is the leader of the EPA up there is not telling the truth, and he was formerly a regional director of the Environmental Defense Fund. And I just thought, I can't stick around this morning, but I was just wondering if your guest might think that's contributing to some of our problems with the environment, the way the farmers are being treated by the environmental extremists, and if she thinks there might be a conflict of interest there between a former member of the Environmental Defense Fund, which is a very liberal outfit, and the Obama administration, and that's it. I could send you this article. I could fax it to you if you had a fax line, and maybe somebody could peruse it there. But it got my attention yesterday.
Outstanding. Is it something you can email to us so we can link it on here?
You know what? It's in the front page of the Capitol Press. I'll go on their website and see if I can share it with you.
Okay. That would be great, because there, you know, if you search Capitol Press, I mean, you could get into all sorts of articles there. So if you send it to us, we'll put a link up for it.
Okay, I will do that. I'll try to do that right now.
Try to do that. It is Sunday morning.
Hey, right. I'm good.
All right, you try.
Okay, thanks, you guys. Keep up the good work.
Bye, Ann. You too.
Okay, bye bye.
Thank you, Ann.
Elizabeth.
Yes.
Good morning.
How are you?
We're good. You are joining Bill and Bob and Aaron.
Hi.
We usually have an Elizabeth, which causes confusion, which would have caused confusion, but
is why we ordered her to stay away today.
Yeah, we did. We sent her away. No, she was very upset, actually. She was the one who found your book. She's like, I'm going to miss the interview. So,
well, we're Facebook friends, so we can keep up with each other that way.
Oh, there you have it. Okay, so I kind of mentioned to people that you live on Salt Springs Island, but you should probably tell them where that is.
It's really just north of Seattle. There's a archipelago of islands that are half in the States and half in Canada. They're called the San Juans in the States and the Gulf Islands in Canada. We actually are below the 49th parallel. If the boundary had been drawn straight across as it was in 1850, we would be in we'd be in the States. So that's where I am.
Nice. And what do people do on your island?
Well, it's a mixture like a lot of rural areas. Now it's half sort of traditional rural people and half bureaucrats and retired university people and wealthy-ish retirees and people who can work. When I moved here in 98, it was just at the beginning of my being able to write for big publications, which is how I made my living because of the internet. So there's a lot of those kinds of workers here. I would say that we're fairly typical in most rural areas because we're aging. Because of all the regulations, young families can't afford to live here, so they leave the island to find work and real estate they can afford. So it's turning into a bit of a bedroom community. It didn't used to be like that. It was much more diverse and lively and fun, but now it's just old rich people, basically.
A whole island filled with old rich people.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, it's kind of like you took a little segment of one of our, say, Florida communities and just took a little snippet out and then put them on an island. Gosh, it's funny. We have a lot of prisoners being released down here. Do you have any extra islands? We'd like to use one for that.
We have a lot of empty space up here.
That is fantastic. All right, we're going to take a really quick break here because I noticed that Bob, who's in charge of the breaks, he's supposed to be me today. He's supposed to be doing this part. Bob, Bob, I'm going to cue you to take a break.
I forgot. I get to take us out.
You get to be the boss of time.
So I'm you and you're Elizabeth.
Yeah, that's okay, right. Okay. Come on.
All right.
And then Bill's just a floater. All right.
All right.
Go be me.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll be right back with more of We the People. I'm new at this. How can I be you when you're in the same room?
Yes. I am so sorry. I'll look the other way.
No, that's okay. Anyway.
So nervous.
You're listening to We the People here on AM 1460 KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Elizabeth Nixon. Stay tuned.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460 530-605-4567.
Saluting our guest this morning.
That's kind of scary. That's kind of a stalker song. Elizabeth, don't be freaked out. We were supposed to play that one at the end. No, I'm kidding. I didn't even know we were playing it. Bob's in charge of the music.
It's the most popular song called Elizabeth.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
Statler Brothers,
yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I know. You haven't heard it either, have you?
No.
Yeah, me either. The two guys are like, yeah, Statler Brothers. We knew that one. I'm like,
so
yeah.
Elizabeth doesn't elicit romantic songs, country songs, but the name isn't...
isn't cool enough for country music. That's very distressing.
That's probably exactly what she's going to say when she listens to this. She'll be like, what the heck was going on? Oh, we lost our minds. We let Bob just do whatever he wanted, and he went crazy.
You know, your comrade Anne talking
yes.
about the EPA being from whatever, the Environmental Defense Fund, there has been for the last 30 years constant movement in and out of state and federal land agencies and environmental groups. I mean, the charts are enormously complex in it. And in fact, there was an investigation a couple of years ago done on the Department of Interior, and it found that there was a epidemic collusion, or I'm not supposed to use that word, the lawyer, cooperation between environmental groups and agency officials.
So what's the difference between collusion and cooperation, money?
Collusion is actionable in law.
Uh-huh.
So they don't want to have to defend me in court, my publisher.
Oh, well, just tell them we made you say collusion.
All right.
We like it. Cooperation sounds like, I don't know, sounds harmless. And this is far from harmless.
That's Agenda 21-ish.
Actually, all joking aside, I mean, it's far from harmless. The environmental community uses our... Do they do this up where you are? Do they use your tax dollars to beat up on you? And then when you have to take them to court, they're still using your tax dollars to defend themselves?
Oh, yeah.
And you're alone?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're paying for both sides of the case. It's brutal.
So they get that pretty much everywhere?
Yeah, and they do it as a warning to anyone else so they don't try anything. So, you know, they have these sort of public show trials of people who basically can't afford to really hire lawyers, so it destroys their lives for 2 or 3 years and it serves as a warning to anyone else.
Don't do it. It'll cost you.
They used to call that public flogging.
Yeah. It's kind of like the current version of the stocks.
Okay,
so I read a thing. It was on the front of your WordPress blog, and I flipped back to it, and you've obviously posted more things. But it gave a little bit of a story that you considered yourself liberal at one point in time. You were into the arts.
Yeah, for most of my career, I've been in the arts or as a writer, and before when I put myself through school running theater companies in the summers and so on, so as a result all my friends were left of center and I was sort of unthinkingly, because you know the emotions of I was telling my husband the other day that at no time in human history has a culture taken the opinion of its entertainers that seriously, because it's all based on feeling and intuition and, you know, firmly held good wishes for, you know, everybody's well-being. But it doesn't, the average artist doesn't deal much in reason and evidence and facts and fiction, facts. It's mostly just, things should be a certain way. So I guess over as I grew up, it became clear to me that the ideas of the left were actually not only not working, but were destructive. So I turned.
I think at one point at the end, I think you said, the only thing I miss about being liberal is the food.
Yeah. It's true. I was in New York for a week last fall, and I ate out every night with one of my best friends who lives there. And it was amazing. I mean, their food is awesome.
You're like, if you can handle the politics, you can get to the food.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I saw you. We were kind of laughing. We were driving back from Grants Pass last night, and I was telling Bill that I was kind of paraphrasing that WordPress story that you had put on there, and I was kind of laughing. He's like, yeah, she kind of like went from quiche to hot dogs. Conservative to a lot of barbecue. that's funny. And so the environmental thing, I mean, you were writing for, who were you writing for? Were you writing for Time?
I started at people? Time magazine in London, and when I moved to Life, so I was at Time Warner for 7 years, and then my I've written for a lot of, you know, broadsheet papers like the New York Times in England and here, and I've written for just about everybody. And where was I going with this? I've forgotten where I was going.
Sorry, I kind of led you into a corner.
I'm banging my head against a wall now. Where am I going now?
Where am I? You started with all of that, but then you hooked this, you know, hard corner and started writing about the environmental community.
Oh, right.
And so
yeah.
Why?
Well, when I moved back to Canada, I came here because my father was dying and I wanted to help, and I'd bought this 30-acre forest when I was working in England because I grew up in the country and I missed it and I didn't want a flat in the city, so I bought this and I just held on to it. And so when I came here, I had an assignment from Harper's Magazine in New York, which is, you know, one of the oldest American magazines, and once was a noble endeavor. It's now just, I think, crap, but it once was a great magazine, and I started writing about the environment, and even though I didn't really know that much about it, but I thought it was fascinating and I thought it was good, but I also had some criticism, as you know, all journalists are taught to tell both sides of the story. So I did. And when I did that, the blowback was unbelievable. I got death threats. People would call me in the middle of the night. It was just insane for weeks and weeks after the Harper's piece was published. And it just made me start to say, what in God's name is going on here? This is just so bizarre. And so I'd had all this so-called real world experience of, you know, proper journalism, and you know, I knew the way things were supposed to be, so it just seemed wrong, and I just started picking away at it, and at every aspect from it, from, you know, fish farming to forestry. And every time I wrote about it, I'd hit a nerve, and people tried to have me fired, and you know, I got legal letters, and so the more anger I stirred up on the islands, and eventually, you know, people like Dennis Hayes from the Bullitt Foundation in Seattle were writing the paper complaining about me, and so as a result, it seemed to me that I had a story here, so I started researching, and you know, there's a lot been written about what the movement has done to rural life, but none of it has been from the mainstream press. It's been regional publishers and regional newspapers, and of course Range magazine was really the leader in it. And so the deeper I got into it, the better the story got, and the more alarming it became, because it was clear that what has been practiced over the last 30 years is a kind of soft genocide of rural people, not only in the States and Canada, but everywhere, and that the movement actually believes that it's necessary to clear the countryside of people, because we had a trustee up here that runs, we're run by an outfit called the Islands Trust, who was one of the authors of Y2Y, which I imagine your listeners know about, but it's this giant land taking that goes from Yellowstone up to the Yukon. It's about 5.2 million acres. It's part of the Wildlands Project. Anyway, she was one of the authors of that, and she told us that we believe that the rural areas should be our rural air conditioner. So it all goes back to climate change, and so they don't want people in the country, and they don't want activity in the country, because that's what will cool the earth down. Jeez. So it's just it's a acre by acre, family by family, business by business, genocide.
Sure. And we were talking about it last night with one of the guys that attended the sheriff event with us, and he was saying that with the Forest Service, he lives in a heavily wooded area, and he said with the Forest Service policy of let it burn, they actually the fire was burning down toward a very, very small community, and their fire line was set beyond the homes.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? You set it beyond the homes, town's going to burn up? And,
right.
And,
there's a lot of that. It's absurdist, and it can only be explained by the overarching aim being everybody out of the country and into the cities or into these giant sort of collector neighborhoods of matchbox housing and high rises around transportation corridors and energy corridors. Nobody knows it's happening, but
you can see it.
It's definitely heavily planned.
Sure, and you can see it, and we commonly refer to those as the rabbit hutches.
Yeah.
Because truly, they're not large enough for anything bigger than a rabbit, and when they clear our rural lands, we won't have meat. Oh, when we come back, you and I talked about that the other day, and that was a very interesting observation. We probably better let let Bob do Elizabeth's job.
That's right, Elizabeth. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People this morning on AM 1460 KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. More with our special guest, Elizabeth Nixon, straight ahead.
Walking through forests of palm tree hearts, men scoff at the monkeys who live in their dark tent. Down by the water hole, drunk every Friday, eating their nuts, saving their raisins for Sunday. Lions and tigers who wait in the shadows, they're fast but they're lazy and sleep in green meadows. Well, that's bongo in the jungle. Well, that's all right by me, yes. Well, I'm a tiger when I want love, but I'm a snake if we did.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Welcome back to We the People.
Oh, I thought you were going to play the whole song. We don't get any words.
We got it later in the show.
Love this song.
Well, if you want to wait about another 40 seconds, we can play it.
Oh, yeah, forget that.
Never question the engineer.
What was I doing? I don't know. I lost my mind. See, I've got Bob being Elizabeth. Now he's being me. Well, now I'm me being Elizabeth. So you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. We are here with Elizabeth Nixon, author of Eco-Fascists. Can't go wrong on that one, you know? it's like, let's see, what's the little... I guess it's not a subtitle because it's above the title, but it says, How Radical Conservationists Are Destroying Our Natural Heritage. And honestly, anybody who lives anywhere outside of a city already knows this. Like, we just had a meeting, Thursday night up in the Butte Valley. Here these folks live in this great, you know, kind of a high desert plain up there, and they're having to deal with wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, gee, I can't think of anything to go better in cattle country than wolves. It's terrific.
Yeah. It's so destructive.
And you said they want to put jaguars on your island.
Not on my island, in New Mexico, in the Boot Heel.
Oh, I thought it was on your island.
No, God, no.
I was like, man, you're doomed. Come on down here. We still got a little room to run.
No, it's in New Mexico. They, Dave Foreman, who's the author of the Wildlands Project, and who claims wolf introduction is a huge success.
Oh, yeah. that's why the little kids are sitting in cages at the bus stop so they don't get snapped off the bench.
That's great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So they're doing it to, and the people in New Mexico are already... They have these awful problems with the border, not just the ones that you hear about, but the environmental community has locked down I don't know how many 100,000 acres, and you can't go into the along the border, and Border Patrol can't go into that protected area with mechanized equipment. So of course, all the illegal aliens cross through there. And I think last year, after that rancher was killed, they allowed them to put in a station, but it was in the hollow of the land, which meant that they, you know, nobody could see who was crossing and when. I mean, it's just everybody. I know that in Siskiyou County, in your area, you're getting beaten up like crazy, but it's happening everywhere.
We were talking Ronnie Reardon, the county commissioner from New Mexico, we had on the show earlier this year about that very thing, about how the land was being locked down in New Mexico, and how he and others in Otero County were fighting back.
Yeah,
because at some point, we've created these rules, and nobody really knows how to fight them. I guess that's the big thing. People are. We had a guy come down from Oregon State University last Thursday, and he was not a wolf expert. He was actually an ag guy, but he does a tremendous amount of research. You know, they put the collars on the cattle and collars on, you know, they've got collars on the wolves. They've got, and of course they've got they've got a zillion wolves in Idaho that are spilling over into Oregon. And so they're doing all these studies and trying to figure out, you know, how they interact, how they can keep the cattle, you know, safe without just being out there with them all night long, because you know, these guys don't have unlimited resources. They can't just be out there all night. And at the end of the day, it's all on the landowner. It's you know, he was telling us a story about a friend of his actually, who went out into his calving pen, and it's about an acre and a half, so it, you know, fair amount of area to be out there in the dark with a flashlight. And he heard weird noises, and the animals were acting strange. And, you know, two of his dogs ran out into the dark, you know, and they don't think anything out of it. And whoosh, here they came running back again, ran right by him. And he lifted his flashlight up, and here were three wolves coming right at him. And he had the presence of mind to shoot in the air, which we were like, what? You know, I'm thinking, how many did he get before they... you know, before they were on him. And this guy was explaining that there was no way that he could shoot them.
Yeah.
Even to protect yourself, you're not allowed to shoot them. And they have to be actually attacking you or your cattle. They have to be on you before you can defend yourself.
Yeah, you're supposed to call Fish and Game.
Yeah.
Excuse me for a minute, Wolf. I've just got to go make a quick call.
Yeah, hang on that for just a sec. Well, the thing they found in Oregon, too, that was difficult is that they had assigned the first call for any kills or anything so that they could document these things to a federal agency. And, of course, you know, they're not working at night. They're not working weekends. And they have eventually worked that around to where the sheriff is the first call. And he tends to be able to get the agencies there, and he's more responsive to the people. So this guy's clue was, hey, you know, you're going to get it anyway. The wolves are coming. This isn't a yes or no question. There's no way for you to fight this off. They're coming, so what are you going to do to manage their encroachment? And he said, that's one thing. If we would have done that sooner, that would have helped us. But isn't that sad?
Yeah.
It's here, really it's sad. A foregone conclusion that these wolves are going to come and just, you know, decimate their, you know.
I know. And within, if you drop a wolf pack near a ranch, within 2 years, their calving rates drops, the breeding rate has dropped, and, you know, defenders of wildlife say, well, we'll make it up to you, but they don't.
No.
So they, and for some reason, well, I mean, I just don't get this, but the press won't report these stories. They only report what the movement says. And so you just get another rancher driven out of business.
Yeah, and these,
the same with mountain lions in.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, we see the same thing, and I don't know about them, but this guy said that really what their research shows is that wolves hunt for three reasons: one, they're hungry; two, they're teaching their young, so that's why they won't kill. They'll take them down and maim them and things, but they won't kill them. And it's like, well, that's weird. And then that's just teaching their young. And then the third one is sport. They have a well-documented history of sport killing.
Yeah.
So here they're the top-level predator.
Really interesting I came across in my research about wolf killing. You know, the movement claims that wolves don't kill, and they don't kill humans. And after the revolution in Russia, after they didn't report, there are a lot of wolves in Russia, they didn't report wolf kills because the communist governments didn't want the rural people to have guns. Mm-hmm. So they created this fiction over 60 years that there were no wolf kills of humans. And there was a fellow, he's written for Range, and I met him. He worked for the National Security Council as a clerk in the USSR, and he went into the archives after Glasnost, and he found all the evidence of wolf kills, and there were thousands of them, thousands that they'd suppressed. And I think that the movement uses the evidence in Russia during the communist era that wolves don't kill humans to promote wolves in rural America.
That's a pretty interesting, that's a new twist we didn't know.
Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh. And at the end of the day, kind of back to where we were before, the end of the day, then you have decimated the meat industry.
Exactly. Which is the goal, after all.
Yeah, if we're going to live in rabbit hutches and eat carrots, we can't possibly be meat eaters.
You don't want to get too big, because you'll outgrow your rabbit hutch and they'll have to
build
a bigger one.
Yeah, and your Prius.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about being small. And,
your smart car.
And your smart car. And, you know, we're three full-size people in here, you know, me and Bill and Bob. And, you know, we're just not... Prius deals.
We're going to have to file a class action suit against the government on behalf of large people.
We're for discrimination.
Exactly.
Regular sized people are going to have to take the little people on.
We'll play their game.
This man reported on. There's a wildlife biologist up in my neck of the woods who, for a long time, believed the movement propaganda. He was a professor at one of our universities. But he believed the propaganda that wolves don't kill humans. And when he retired, he moved to Vancouver Island, not too far from me. And he bought a house and settled down in this small, it's a small town, it's an old logging town, beautiful. And a wolf pack moved into the area. And he found that this pack had surrounded their neighborhood and was starting to go up to front stoops and hanging around the back gardens.
Whoa.
And he watched them for about 2 years. And he came to the conclusion that what this pack was doing was it was grooming the neighborhood. And it was testing the boundaries and seeing whether they would be shot at or anything. And, of course, nobody did because everybody believed that wolves don't kill humans. And then what happens next is that they take a pet or a chicken, and then the child goes. And he thinks that's what's happening to American wolves since the reintroduction in 96 or whatever it was, that, you know, wolves they stayed mostly up in the hills, but they started to come down because pets and children and farm animals are far easier to hunt than moose and elk and whatever is running wild out there, and it'll just increase.
Yeah, well, this the guy, oh, sorry, Bob.
That's okay. We'll come back to the subject of wolves momentarily here on We the People. We're visiting with Elizabeth Nixon on KCNR, AM 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
In touch with the ground, I'm on the high.
right, that's it. You're fired, Bill. Sorry. Welcome back to Meet the People Radio, where we talk about serious topics, but we have a hard time being serious talking about the serious topics because it's stressful. It is just stressful. So in our stress, we somehow find it amusing. And Bob keeps us going with the music. All right, Elizabeth, back.
Yes.
Back to the wolves. We weren't really going to talk about wolves, but what the heck. So once they've driven all the cattle ranchers out, you had told me an interesting observation about the eradication, basically, of meat.
Right. Well, I mean, that's been going on for a really long time.
Yeah.
Right? When did the whole push towards fashionable vegetarianism start? In the 70s? Well, like all bad ideas, it comes from the 70s. So, and then the methane from cows adding to global warming. So my theory is that out of the UN, out of Codex Alimentarius, which is this world sort of global food code, they are trying to bioengineer humans to be smaller, less ambitious, weaker, more manageable, because they don't eat meat, and they, you know, protein is limited to. Well, they, you know, the fish thing is fascinating too, right? Because they fight fish farming, but they also have cut down. The California catch has been reduced by 50% in the last 10 years, right? They've just taken 50% of the fish boats out of the off the ocean, and but they won't allow fish farming, so they don't want people to eat fish either. They want us to be vegetarian because we're more manageable.
Let that sink in. But yeah, I mean, do you ever see any, I don't know, large, robust? I mean, was Jack LaLanne a vegetarian?
No, he was not.
And you George Burns smoked cigars. I mean, you know,
Popeye had all his spinach. I mean, he was. You know.
I think that Popeye is UN propaganda.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I love it. Popeye's down too. All right, Popeye's on the list. That's it. You know,
go wimpy.
Well, okay. Wait a minute. What was Bluto eating? See, that's the thing. We've got to go back and look at this, because as kids, and I do think that happens as kids. There are things that just. You know, you learn it because you just hear it all the time, just like commercials.
Yeah,
they play in the
back.
We were
being brainwashed, and we didn't realize it.
We had no idea.
Well, you know, you got to say, I mean, I came to the whole UN Agenda 21 thing pretty late, and I backed into it because basically the only way that this could make sense was that there was an overarching plan, and what do we think these people do all day at the UN? I mean, some of it is, you know, genuine humanitarian aid, but of the budget that they spend for development in the developing world, a very tiny slice of the money they spend is humanitarian. Most of it is Agenda 21 development, so sustainable development, which is what you are experiencing down there, is sustainable development. They take out all the dams, mm-hmm. get rid of all the ranches, you know, no private property, no paddocks, no, you know, the whole, you know, a sustainable thing is anti-development. So all that money is being spent by people who have to show every year progress, or they won't, you know, get their bonuses and their upgrades and so on. So they've got to do something. Yeah. You know, it's just a great big mega corporation filled with bureaucrats that have to prove themselves. So they've created this giant fiction to allow themselves endless employment and lovely trips to five-star resorts to talk about urgent problems that only they can solve. And
only
what
they
else
can
are they
see.
Doing? Of course they do. This is what they're doing.
It's all about justifying their continued existence.
Yeah. There's a policy guy up here I read recently. He's quite prominent in our government. And he says that because the boomer generation was so numerous, what we did up here, and to some extent you did down in the States, was we created pseudo-jobs. The size of our government from about 1975 on, it jumped 30%. And all of these jobs that were created were jobs that had no value other than to keep people employed and off the streets and so on. So these people had to do something, but they were unmoored to reality. So they created these things that had no utility, these constructs that had no utility, but they infused with meaning by, you know, these persuasive arguments. But, you know, they're bringing us down, basically. They're breaking the culture because they think it's wrong and it's unhealthy and it's bad and the planet is dying.
Yeah, I like that. Like there are enough people to actually kill the whole planet. And the other thing that you see is the cattle ranching in the cattle industry, I guess, because so many of them use our public lands for grazing.
Yes.
Which is a good thing because it keeps our public lands, the fuels load down.
Yeah, it's healthy. The land needs people.
Exactly. So now we're not supposed to have cattle in the public land, no people in the public land, and the prevailing policy of the Forest Service is to let it burn. So kind of a perfect storm, if you will, all these things coming together. Now, when you did this, when you wrote this book and you got involved in the environmental, the big picture, when you started looking at things like Agenda 21 and all that, I'm sure you took a lot of heat, but did you find any people that you that used to hang out before with the good food people? Did any of those folks go, "Oh, I never looked at that"? Did they go with you or did they all just ditch you?
It's funny, on this island, the people that really, I think we talked about this earlier in the week, the people that really got Agenda 21 were the young people, who wanted to start families, you know, young men and women in their 30s, and late 20s, because the land is so expensive and it's out of their range, and they see the rich as locking up the world again. It's just a repeat of old patterns, so that they can't afford to buy, and they don't want to live in matchboxes. The ones that live here, they want to live in the country.
Elizabeth, we're going to have to hold it right there. We've got a break for news at the top of the hour, but we'll pick up where we left off. Elizabeth Nixon is our guest this morning here on KCNR Shasta Redding. You're listening to We the People. It's 9 o'clock.
Good morning. You're joining We the People Radio here on Sunday morning. You're listening to Elizabeth, and sometimes Bill says something.
Hi.
yeah, that's about it too. and then Bob Martin, our fabulous engineer.
You are listening to Elizabeth, but not the one you're used to listening to.
Yeah, we have a different Elizabeth. We swapped out this week, and we have Elizabeth Nixon, who is up on Salt Springs Island in Canada, and she has written a book called Eco-Fascists, How the Radical Conservationists Are Destroying Our Natural Heritage, which is not a newsflash for anybody but the radical conservationists, because we've all figured it out. Let's see, if you want to catch us online, it's wethepeopleradio.us. If you want to know what we spoke about last hour, you can go there later on today, and the archive will be there. You can re-listen to the program or send it to a friend. And if you would like to phone in, if you have questions or comments, 530-605-4567. And if you call us at 2 minutes to 10, when the show ends at 10, we're not taking your call. So I'm just going to be real upfront about that.
We have procrastinators on the phone lines.
Yeah, maybe they call it 2 minutes to 10. They go, "I just have a comment." You're like, "No, no, you can't do that."
Elizabeth, are you on the American or the Canadian side up there?
I'm on the Canadian side.
Oh, she's on the Canadian side, and she had an interesting observation about our election before we circle back on the wolves, I guess, in keeping with our theme. But You were talking to me about what people are thinking up there. I mean, we figure we're the only ones sweating out this November election, but that's
Well, when I say people,
mm-hmm.
I mean conservatives like me, are sweating it out because I mean, I just see disaster if Obama wins. Financial disaster for lots of people. So, and you are, I know, at least 60% of our economy. So if you go down, we go down. We have a fiscal conservative prime minister right now, and he's actually starting to cut back pension and salaries in the federal civil service, which is awesome because it's never been done before. And we're in, as a result of 4 years of his being very frugal, we're in good financial shape. But you know, if you keep going on this course, we go down too. You know, if your economy blows up, and how can it not blow up with that deficit
mm-hmm.
and the spending levels and the lack of growth? If you have another 4 years, you're in real trouble. If you're in trouble, we're in trouble.
Yeah, so, and that's kind of an interesting thing. I don't think we think about. I mean, we spend a lot of time looking at, you know, Europe and the crisis over there and all that, but we kind of forget about you guys up there. You're kind of quiet.
Yeah, well, we're a giant country with very few people in it. We have vast resources. I went up to the oil sands on a briefing tour about a month ago. And actually went into one of the mines, Suncor, which is the oldest and biggest mine. And it's a game changer. We can have energy independence in 10 years out of the oil sands in Alberta alone. And we've got them all over our province. We have so many natural resources up here. The wealth that could be generated out of it is just astonishing, but it's all been locked down.
And we would be more than happy to,
destroying your economy.
We would be more than happy to share that wealth in the form of the Keystone Pipeline if they ever get it built.
Exactly.
Yeah, if we can get out of our own way. Very interesting. So, do you find that most people are kind of? Where are people politically? Are they plugged into our stuff, or is it just folks like you that are kind of looking at the bigger picture?
Basically, your politics is more important than ours for us.
Interesting.
We watch your politics more than we watch our own. Ours is, there's a kind of Toronto axis of Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, and they're very interested in themselves. But the rest of the country, we look to the States because you still lead. And it's not just you. It's not just us. If you go down, everybody goes down.
Yeah. Well,
get rid of that guy.
Where are the Canadians going to go for decent health care if we go down?
Exactly.
Yeah, if we don't get rid of Obamacare. Well, I had somebody on the chat room ask quite a while ago, and I kind of forgot. But do you guys feel like you have the same level of freedom that we do, despite the restrictions we're talking about this morning, but just in general?
No, we don't. We have issues with free speech. We've got hate speech laws that have really smothered public debate. There's a lot of hatred for the right up here. It surpasses even the hatred from the left for the right down there. That's irrational and fashionable. So I kind of think of the adults in Canada just sort of go quietly about their business and keep their mouth shut. And so far, they've been voting in, the only grown-up in our politics for the last 20 years. So I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, kind of.
What
and I did
question?
Have somebody in the chat. Hey, let's not nitpick. I have somebody on the chat who was asking. He says they are far from quiet. Often the truth can only be found in the Canadian Free Press.
Really? Oh, the Canadian Free Press. Oh, yeah, that's a very mouthy little paper, but it's definitely not in the mainstream.
Okay. All right, so they're allowed to say what they want, but do they? Do you guys consider them a good source?
No, nobody in the sort of serious media takes them seriously. It's marginal.
Interesting.
We have, I think, what you will have if you've got another 4 years of Obama, which is basic lockdown of the media by the left, complete lockdown. I mean, I know you think that it's bad now, but there are no other voices, really, other than the Canadian Free Press, and people don't take them seriously. We don't have a Fox News, and we don't have the extraordinary blogs that you have and the extraordinary serious conservative journals and magazines that you have that I read every day.
Well, like AM radio, a lot of AM radio is conservative talk.
Yeah, so we do have good AM radio, that's true.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. We don't compare that much. I guess we kind of, except for the, you know, that imaginary line up there and, you know, going through customs, it seems kind of like we're all the same.
Yeah.
And we also don't realize how much you guys are counting on us. That was an eye opener for me, and we hope that all your fears and ours are well grounded, and that none of them are real.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is said if you really want to know what's happening in the United States, you have to read the foreign press. Now that's frequently a reference to papers like the UK Guardian, but.
Right.
We have a mainstream media here, both print and broadcast, that seems to suppress anything, especially going into this election, that makes our current president look bad. It's as if it never happened, which is why the alternative media is so important here. Do you find the same thing there?
I suppose the alternative media for conservatives is important, but it's not as hard fought up here as it is down there. There's not as much riding on it. Our government is much bigger than yours, so people have just basically accepted that fact and hope that, you know, over time, if we're really quiet and we don't, you know, ruffle too many feathers, we can just start unplucking or just peeling the government out of each sector. Well, for instance, last year they got rid of the Wheat Board, which was a price-fixing organization in the prairies, just told farmers where and what and for how much to sell their product. I mean, so there's these tiny advances that the conservative government tries to make as much under the radar as possible, because our press is so monolithically left that if you get their attention, they'll destroy you. We have this thing called the CBC, which is like PBS and NPR on steroids. They have $1 billion a year, and they basically gut journalism because it's statist. It promotes the idea of a heavy-handed state where the government is involved in absolutely everything and determines absolutely everything.
And do they? And then you pay for that with your tax dollars?
And we pay for it, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, people wanted to know, and now people are like, yeah, what is going on up there? somebody in here wanted to know, do you guys have the Tea Party? Do you have Rush Limbaugh? You know, do you have any of that kind of stuff?
No, we don't, and we wish we did. I mean, when I was listening to your lead-in
field
to your
trip
program, I was thinking how envious I was that you had such a lively politics, and I wish we had a Tea Party up here, but we don't.
And if people wanted to start something like that, would they be shut down?
I don't know whether they'd be shut down or not. Several of our, you know who Mark Stein is, I suppose, right?
Yes.
He's quite a famous columnist in the States, and he's often subs for Rush Limbaugh when he's away, or Sean Hannity. He lives in New Hampshire. Anyway, he grew up, I think, in Canada and went to university here, and he wrote for a couple of our major. He's very, very funny, and he's very, very good. He was charged with hate speech up here a few years ago, as was another journalist, and they were dragged through human rights tribunals, and they were acquitted, but it cost a lot of money, and it was extremely stressful. So if you really get too far, if you're too public here, they will go for you and try to ruin you.
Wow,
yeah,
interesting.
That I've seen several times.
I have somebody on the, Lori here on the chat. She says, so, and I can almost hear the voice. You know, she's like, so we can't move to Canada if Obama gets back in? It's kind of like, oh, but wait a minute. We were thinking we were just going to come and hide out at your place. Didn't we do that once before? Yeah, it's like, that's
how we're working on it.
Yeah, that's off the table. And then we've got to take a really swift break, but I would very much like to know about the trust that runs your island. We're seeing
a lot
of conservancies down here, and some people don't realize how bad they are.
Right.
Okay, bye. We'll be right back.
But they don't listen to me. I talk to the stars, but they never hear me.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'll be giving away when we all live together. Talking about together.
You're just playing that stuff to frustrate us.
Totally.
I like the singing to the trees song. It's like, oh, man.
That was out of Paint Your Wagon.
Really?
Really.
In Paint Your Wagon, they were singing to the trees?
I talked to the trees.
Oh, I talked to the trees. Wow. Was it supposed to be funny?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The whole thing was funny, in fact. Did you ever see it?
I guess, but not for a long time, and I totally didn't remember that.
Well, it was a Broadway musical originally, but I especially liked the movie with Lee Marvin back in the
That's,
late
I guess, 60s. What I pictured is the movie with Lee Marvin.
Lee Marvin, I loved him.
Yeah, he was a real man. There was no way he was wearing chick pants. Never happening.
The antithesis of political correctness.
Exactly. Okay, so Bill's asking me. Bill, can you ask her?
Yeah, I was just curious. You said that you have, you know, tons of natural resources up there, but you have the same problems we have. And I was curious to know, I know your timber industry up there has a potential of being huge. How was the oil sands projects, how were they able to get pushed through the environmental movement?
Gauntlet.
No, first of all, Alberta is the most right-wing province in Canada.
Look
and
it out.
Has had a conservative premier, which is like your governor, for the last 40 years. I don't think they've ever had a liberal in power. And so they were able to develop it. But, you know, we're blocked by the pipeline thing. There's the pipeline to the BC coast for China is being stopped by our environmentalists here. And, of course, the XL pipeline south is being stopped. So that really puts a crimp in the development of the oil sands. But when I was up there, I mean, the thing is so... One good thing, I guess, about it is that it's state of the art, clean and green, and the tailings ponds are all being filled in, and the care that they take to make it all work, and then also the wealth that's being created. I think the small city where the oil sands is located, it's the youngest city, and everybody's having children. Everybody's got money, they've got houses, they've got cars, they have this fantastic rec center. I mean, they have lives, they have hope up there.
That must drive the left crazy.
Resources.
Yeah.
And they, you know, if you're 40 years old and you're, you know, making a six-figure income and you got to, I mean, it's like, I don't know, the 50s or something up there. It's fantastic.
Pleasantville.
It shows what could happen.
The Truman Show.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, but everybody is so positive. And, you know, we have a lot of Indians up here, and they have deals with the oil companies and with the government, and they're in business, so they too are thriving. So it can be done so well, and it's such a positive story. And it could be that way all over North America. But the people that are holding us back are all those environmental NGOs, which are all funded by the biggest foundations in American history, the most exalted and august foundations like the Rockefellers and the Fords and the Packers and that dreadful woman, Teresa Heinz. They've destroyed life for the middle classes in my country and in yours. It's just like giant babies tearing up the lives of tens of millions of people. It makes me so cross.
That's such a nice,
I'm Canadian for pissed off.
Yeah.
Such harsh talk.
So cross. That's like, I know a lady who's Welsh, and what does she say? Bloody hell. And then something about the way she said it, it just makes me laugh. And then she told me what it really means. I was like, oh, well, that's why I laugh when you say it.
By the way, one of our alert members of the chat room, Laurie, pointed out that one of our other heroes, Clint Eastwood, was in that Paint Your Wagon movie.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
And she's right.
I remember that. She says, yeah, I think Clint Eastwood sang that. Huh, interesting. He didn't sing that. Oh, no, that's a different joke. just kidding. Okay, wait, go back.
If you composed a song, you didn't write that.
Yeah, you didn't write that. we're never going to get tired of that. And it's true. He did say it. All you lefty loons out there, he totally said it. It's on video. But boy, oh boy, if you listen to Sirius Radio, they'll do whole programs about how he didn't say it. It's like, wow.
Elizabeth, are you able to, unless your government has put some kind of restrictions on it, but are you able to stream American radio stations online?
Oh, yeah. I listen to Rush and Glenn Beck. And, yeah, we have modern technology up here.
That's great, aside from the fact they're on our competitor. But please check out kcnr1460.com.
Enough of that, Bob.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
You have Dennis Miller, though, right? You have Dennis Miller.
We have Dennis Miller and Laura Ingram and Michael Savage.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong on any of that.
I have an app on my iPad that's conservative radio, so I can listen to everybody.
A conservative radio app. I love it.
That's kind of nice. Well, so the guys on your island, this trust, are they all over Canada, right, or are they only in your island?
They're only in the Gulf Islands.
Okay.
They are a typical organization in the world of environmentalism. It's an administrative council that's taken control of land use, and as you know, land use in the country is just about everything. They are anti-democratic in that we do not have proportional representation. So our big island, Salt Spring, which is the one that I live on, has 10,000 people, and it's 74 square miles. It's the biggest island. All the other islands have between 400 and 1,000 people, but have the same representation. So we have essentially about 8% of the vote when deciding about what to do with our own land. And that is typical. So in the western states, two Canadian provinces and seven American states have been drawn together under this umbrella called the Western Climate Initiative.
Oh, we love that.
It's designing regulations for this sort of bioregion, these nine entities, and it's transnational. It will take away democratic rights because land use will be assigned to them, and they will see everything through the prism of whether it increases carbon or decreases carbon. And that is everywhere. So the California Coastal Commission, for instance, is very much like the trust and equally as repressive. I mean, if you talk to anybody who's had anything to do with the California Coastal Commission. They, you know, it's just like you are entering the gates of hell here and you will never leave. That's what it's like dealing with either our trust or the California Coastal Commission or, in fact, any other of these bureaucratic fiefdoms that these people have set up in order to take away our voting rights.
And what do other people say about that? Do they just figure it's a foregone conclusion, so they just roll over for it?
It's incredibly hard to fight it. I mean, we turfed out our two worst fascists last November, and we've been trying to get a municipality for our island because it's the largest unincorporated place in Canada. And we voted in people who said that was their primary goal, was to get a study, and 6 months later it hasn't happened. Why? Because our opposition really knows how to work the bureaucracy. So they know all the routes through it, and they know how to slow things down. They know how to stop things. And so even though two-thirds of the island voted for it, they still won't deliver it. So you basically have to start a rebellion in order to get anything done, which is, you know, I'm sure you've tried to start a rebellion. It's exhausting, and it's time-consuming, and it's expensive, and people would just rather ignore it. And, you know, you can't really blame them for ignoring it.
No. At some point, yeah, if people don't stick together, it is just exhausting. The nice part is when you really do look around, there are a lot more people who understand than are part of, I mean, I'm sure that the people who run this trust and all that, they're not really the majority of people, are they?
No, they're not. They're not. It's just that the majority of people are asleep.
Kind of powerless and disorganized. And
yeah.
I don't mean disorganized like, you know, messy. I mean, just they're not able to speak with a consistent voice.
Yeah.
Or in Canada, maybe they're not necessarily asleep, but they're afraid to speak out for fear they'll be accused of hate speech or something like that.
Yes, there's that issue, too. Somebody in Washington State who is the head of the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights told me last year when I was down there about something called the spiral of silence, and it's a sociological term that was invented when people started to study about what on earth were the German people thinking during the Hitler years? And what seems to happen is that people just get afraid, and they shut up, and they draw into themselves, and there is this kind of conspiracy of silence, which can, once it's broken, once you make people feel that it's safe to say, well, the trust is destroying our economy, then they will come out and say it because they all feel it, but they're intimidated into and the trust will hear. We had business owners or shop owners say, look, you cannot put me down as a visible contributor to your campaign because I'll lose customers. Or people would go into stores and say, if you are visibly, vocally against the trust, we will punish you. So this in a small community, that holds a lot of weight.
Yeah, and that really...
It's scary because we see the same thing happening in this country.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, outing anybody who's a conservative contributor and demonizing them. Well,
yeah.
Did you guys follow that whole thing with Chick-fil-A?
Oh, yeah.
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 That was kind of a little backfire they had going on there.
Was ugly.
Yeah, it didn't really work out so well.
All right, we need to take a quick break here. We the People Radio on KCNR 1460.com. Our guest is Elizabeth Nixon, and we'll have more after this.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. About them. What do they want? What should we do about them? What do they want? What should we do about them? What do they want? What should we do about them?
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
That's the problem. That's like the environmental moment.
Yeah, I have a question.
Are you doing the gun thing?
No.
Yeah, because we want to know.
No, let's do the gun thing later. I had one more question about the wolves. I hate to keep beating in the head.
Go ahead.
There's lots of wolves in Canada. And do you get to shoot them up there?
Yeah, oh.
I think we do, actually. If you've got a ranch, I have a friend who has a ranch way up in the high desert, and when we go out checking our fence lines or something, I make her take a gun because there's grizzly and wolves up there. And you can.
Oh. Interesting.
Because they're not endangered in northern British Columbia.
Of course they're not, because you're sending them all down here. And we're bitter about it, too.
And that
flows. Have you heard about the introduction of Russian cadaver wolves?
Oh, yeah. And they are big.
Yeah.
Really big.
Yeah, 250 pounds.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's just what we need. We need 250-pound wolves. That'll be fantastic. The gun commercial came on, right, when we were going to break, and I thought, hey, what about that? Do you guys have, what's your gun situation up there?
Nobody has any guns.
By choice or by decree?
It's just, I do have, you know, real country friends who have guns, but mostly people just—it's just not. You know, we're de-weaponized.
Okay, and so has that been for a long time, or is that just a social thing?
It's been ever since I've been alive. So I don't know. I think it's just it's part of. You know, we had an Obama in the 60s called Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who was very much cut from the same cloth. He was a sort of European socialist. He had ties to the Russian communists. He very much believed all that stuff. The Anglos of Canada were his enemy, and he put into legislation all of these ideas that you're now grappling with, and I mean, we were debt free when Pierre Elliott Trudeau came along, and he increased the size of government, and now we've got this giant debt and huge annual deficits and this giant government, and he took away gun rights.
No kidding. So if you're a rancher, are you allowed to own a gun?
Oh no, if you're a rancher, you can have, yeah, and you can hunt, and you can own guns. It's just very complicated, and you know, there's a registry. There's a huge scandal a few years ago. The Liberals put into place a long gun registry, which ended up costing $1 billion, and which has been allowed to die a sort of lingering death. So it's an issue, but it's not a big issue.
Interesting.
Anyway, our country has, it isn't like your country. There are very few people in real rural areas in Canada, because I think we're probably 10 years ahead of you in terms of clearance of people from the countryside. So, if the voting block down there is small, in up here it's negligible.
Interesting. And so there's really no way to mount a resistance, because once people have lived in the urban areas and they no longer work on the land, they no longer come from that kind of background, it's just out of sight, out of mind?
Yeah. But I think that's probably right. Depressing, but true.
Interesting. So in your, I don't know if this is your book jacket or not, but I printed it out and looks kind of like a book jacket type of printout. But you talk in this little thing about how to fight back, what people can do to fight back against this environmental movement. And I thought, well, hey, if you have any ideas there, we better not save that till the last 2 minutes.
So what happened here, or that's really helped. And one of the researcher, my primary researcher here, has been able. We have this one small woman that called Vivian Krause, who started number crunching about all the money that came out from the U.S. That was used to deprive Canadians of their natural resources. So she discovered that over the last 10 years, various foundations, the Heinz Foundation, the Tide Foundation, the Hewlett-Packard people, the Gordon and Betty Moore, all the usual suspects have spent $300 million just propagandizing. And she started just writing about this and where this money came from and how it was used. And she charged the Tides Foundation in particular, they have Tides Canada up here, of getting involved in and helping a very green mayor of Vancouver win, and also the current premier of the province in her leadership contest was backed by Tides. And so, as a result, had this obligation towards them to be, you know, to follow all these sustainability rules. That made people very angry. And it changed our natural resource policy. And it changed our, first of all, what happened was that the IRS, the Canadian IRS, was given $8 million to investigate private foundations and what they were doing to destroy the ability of Canadians to use their own resources. And then the environmental budgets of all the agencies were cut substantially, I think by 20%. And a lot of restrictions were lifted. So there's a big island next to me. It's a huge island. It's called Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
All the environmental assessments on projects currently in front of whatever review board have been canceled. They don't have to do environmental assessments for the entire island of Vancouver.
Oh, my gosh.
It's an extraordinary thing. So she was almost like David with a rock.
Sure.
She just had the right rock at the right time. And it changed policy. So it can happen, and it can happen quite quickly. But, you know, you can't have somebody like Mr. Obama in power, or Jerry Brown, either.
Yeah, he's done wonders for us and our economy.
Honest God, how stupid are Californians?
At this point, we can't quantify that. But, you know, the thing that's bad is, we don't really know any of those people exactly. I mean, and obviously we're in the far northern end, but I don't just stay right here. I mean, I speak to people in other places, and it's like, who is doing this? This is just crazy. Did you hear about, I mean, my favorite one, I don't know if you signed it or not. I guess I should check. But my favorite bill that went through this year, and I'm using the term favorite in a snarky way, They passed a bill that said that children could have more than two parents. And that's out there to be signed. It's like,
for purposes of custody and child support and that sort of thing.
Right.
Specifically.
Well, what kind of nuttiness is that? Who does things like that?
California.
They're just, it's embarrassing. I mean, it's just embarrassing. But, yeah, so you guys watch that too, huh?
With bemusement.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. It's like finding out you're on a nanny cam, you know? It's like, oh, they watched us do that? Oh, it's worse than we thought. We've got all the Canadians watching and scoffing, too. And I don't blame you. We scoff a lot.
Hey, Elizabeth,
there's nothing a Canadian loves to do more than insult and criticize the Americans.
Hmm.
It's a thing that they all do. Because I married an American and I worked for Time Inc. and I actually like Americans, I always raise my hand at a dinner party and say, excuse me, but I actually really like Americans and you guys are being racist. That's spelled R-A. You know, it is quite shocking. I think it's what everybody around the world feels. It's envy. or it used to be envy.
Yeah.
Elizabeth,
it used to be envy.
Before we wrap up the program, could you, when we come back from our break, could you touch some more on forest fire management and mismanagement? Because that's a subject near and dear to our hearts in the North State.
And very important.
All right. We will take a swift break. Oh, I'm stealing Bob's job. I'm going to go back to my own job here. We're going to take a quick break. You'll be back with We the People Radio in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
The home of Free Fire Media.
You don't care for me. I don't care about that. You got a new fool. Ha, I'd like to laugh at. I have only one a burning desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Good one. You're listening to We the People Radio. We are back with Elizabeth Nixon, the author of Eco-Fascists. And a bunch of other stuff, but you have to spell her name properly. Nixon is spelled N-I-C-K-S-O-N. So if you search her online, you won't be able to find her under that other spelling. What is it? I'm not a crook. Yeah, that's not the spelling. So okay, if you guys have the environmental wackos up there, and you're not allowed to use your natural resources, do you guys have massive forest fires too?
Yes, we do.
That's funny. And we just said we're not taking any more calls, and look at the phone just rang. That's pretty funny. Well, it's not 2 minutes till yet. It's 10 minutes till. Crazy. All right. So what? So what do you guys have up there for fires?
Well, we have the same kind of fires that you have that are they're canopy fires, and they're incredibly destructive because of overgrowth in our forests, because we're not allowed to thin or replant or do any forest maintenance, because the thing that we have to follow is the thing that everybody has to follow all over the world. I mean, even Russia's forest fires are caused by the same reason, is by this idiot notion of natural regulation, which is that you have to leave nature to itself. So if you've got a forest that's been logged every 80 years for the last 200, if you don't tend it, you have 500 trees where once there were 60 to 80 healthy trees. They're undernourished trees. They're thin. They're spindly. All they need is a spark, and they go up like crazy. There's brush climbing the trees so that there's fire ladders everywhere, and when the fire starts, it's not a low, slow burn the way fires were before the white man started clear cutting and using the forest. They're giant stand eliminating fires, so that you have these vast patches of desolation, which, you know, emit carbon. Hello.
Yeah. But like carbon matters. Yeah. And so for all the little Priuses we're going to drive and all the rabbit hutches we're going to build, it doesn't take many of these fires to completely overtake any type of,
exactly.
You know, environmental happiness we created prior. It's just, it's kind of like building your family a really, really nice house and feeding your kids organic food, and then, you know, beating them every night before they go to bed. You know, like,
yeah, pretty
okay,
much.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
And, you know, we have the beetle kill forest, right? And 8 million acres of the BC forest was killed by this pine beetle. Now, for a long time, they said it was the pine beetle was there because of global warming. But in fact, what happens is that, you know, pest infestation, it comes and it goes. Like everything in nature, it's unpredictable. Species jump and then they collapse and so on. So we had the pine beetle. They discovered a compound. It was an arsenic-based compound that had a very limited reach, that if you treated part of the forest, the beetle would die and it would not travel. And the Sierra Club backed a group of physicians out of Smithers, B.C., which is a small logging community up in the forest, who said that it was would be harmful to wildlife. And they even stopped testing this compound as a result. So 8 million acres of trees died. 2 million of those acres have gone up in flames. And there's no wildlife in these dead forests. They've all gone. You know, it's just so destructive. There's nothing that they do that's constructive. It's all destructive.
And at the end of the day, do people believe that? Or are they just, kind of powerless?
Nobody knows it. I mean, I had to go deep into peer-reviewed literature to find that out.
Really?
Yeah. Nobody knows it. It's not reported.
Well, and you said that most people live in the city, so I guess if you're...
They don't care.
We're kind of spread out all over the place, and so we have to drive through the places that are all burning up, and we see it.
Yeah. So Greenpeace says, the forests are burning because of global warming.
Yeah.
No, it's because we're not taking care of them.
Yeah, Greenpeace, let's go to the state of California again, since we like that so much. The state of California actually came out with I think it was supposed to be a scientific paper, that said that the forest fire, the heat of the forest fires, in case I guess they're hotter now than they used to be, the heat of the forest fires is what proves there is global warming. That's like, are you kidding?
So stupid.
It is totally stupid. And honestly, I think most people just kind of shrug their shoulders. And for a lot of years, I mean, we saw this with, do you have Spotted Owl up there? Do you have that whole thing?
Oh, God, the owl.
Yeah. You love that part. Well, when that first started, I remember because we were involved in the timber industry. And people said, this is stupid. Right. Nobody's going to fall for this. It's like, uh-oh.
Well, now they're doing that with the same thing with the sage grouse, right?
Oh yeah,
which is like it's like the chicken of the prairies. They're so common, and really the reason that the sage grouse numbers are declining is because of wolf and coyote predation. But they say it's because of human interference, and that they're using that as the next step into getting rid of ranches.
I was going to say, yeah, and they're using that to cut back on the grazing. And interestingly enough, as these forests burn up in tens of thousands of acres, you reduce the public lands that the cattle can graze on, and then you designate the rest of it. We're seeing this in Modoc County, actually, northeastern mm-hmm. California, the very top of California there. And now this, because of the sage grouse, now they can't graze there either. So it's you look at it and you go, way this could be a coincidence.
In Lander, Wyoming, where Fish and Game said that, you know, we find that sage grouse are fine around grazing cattle. They're more likely to be around grazing cattle than away from grazing cattle. And they even graze around the tailings ponds. Or feed around the tailings pond. Sage grouse are a resilient bird. The reason their numbers are declining is because of wolf predation.
Interesting. And people don't, again, people don't know about it?
No.
And so when you...
But in other words, you're not allowed to control the wolf population sufficiently.
Yes. You can't touch wolves, so if you were a wolf, would you rather hunt a deer through the forest or kill half dozen sage grouse? I mean, I'd be lazy and go for the sage grouse.
Well, and it's interesting because they're watching this guy I heard last Thursday, the guy from Oregon State, and they put tracking collars on the cattle and on the wolves, and then they make them send a signal like every, actually it was one signal per second on the cattle, because they were easier to change the batteries. They were more close by. And the wolves, they couldn't do it as often, so they only beep every 5 minutes or whatever. Oddly enough, because the wolves are being collared and tracked like that, they have much more contact with humans.
Oh, so they're less afraid of them.
Exactly. And that's why they're coming in closer to where the people live and all that. So they watched how the cattle moved around. And what's happening is the cattle are just kind of being tormented. It was amazing because the collar tracks how fast they run. There were several cows in this herd that were booking it at 30 miles an hour.
Wow.
It was like, can cows run that fast? And then then there were some other, you know, they show it's like a bar graph, you know. This one batch of cows never dropped below 6 miles per hour for a very long time.
Oh, my God.
Now, cattle don't do that. They stand around all day.
Yeah.
Talking about the weather or whatever it is they do out there. And,
well, I can tell you those cows aren't going to breed next season.
No. And then they showed this wolf, of course. He had a satellite imagery, of course, of where the little dots were for the wolf, where the people's house was. It was within 350 meters of their home with a toddler, with tricycles out there. I mean, this isn't a production farm. This is a family farm.
Yeah.
So this wolf is out there just kind of hanging, you know, on the fringe.
Yeah.
It's pretty creepy.
It's extraordinary, I think. The whole picture is so, it's so dark, right? And so almost universally destructive. I mean, I don't know whether you saw this story in Range last year about Alan Savory, who's a...
Uh-oh, we're into the last 45 seconds.
Oh, we've got 45 seconds.
Oh, this happens every
time.
He says
if you take cattle off the range, the range dies. It turns to desert within years.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Well,
which is what a lot of the left wants, we think.
Yeah, yeah. Just
yeah.
Yep, because we don't need that range if we're going to live in our rabbit hutches. Elizabeth Nixon, we very much enjoyed chatting with you. You are welcome back on We the People any old time.
Well, you guys are great.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We will be back next week here on We the People. You're listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.